I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. In the food world, there's perhaps no bigger buzzword these days than sustainability. And one of its biggest advocates and practitioners is Chef Jose Duarte. He's the chef and owner of Toronto in the North End. Chef Jose Duarte, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
How do you practice what you preach?
Well, it's been a long process. You know, it's a very complex topic, and it doesn't take a day. But it's part of a research, joint research, where employees and all towards a change. So we started about 6-7 years when we saw a need to. It was a decision of an economic decision to actually try to save some money by saving energy, and I found that it was very easy to make those changes, and at the same time we will help the environment. So we concentrated on. In a restaurant, the restaurant industry consumes a lot of energy. We start with energy, water conservation, gas conservation, etc. So using different technologies to help that, looking at footprints, looking at different ways of, you know, lowering our footprint and helping the environment and saving money. So and in the whole process, we were really concentrated on try to make those changes, but not really seeing how sustainability does not really relate to only energy or recycling or composting or just a few of the things that many people think is that way. So we found that it was more than that. We had an economic side, it had a social side, and also obviously the environmental and side. So we gradually found that in these changes, we chefs, we entrepreneurs can make a difference. Our restaurant produces, we minimize our garbage production to 0.01%. We recycle, we compost everything, we buy renewable energy. We're able to, our wine list is 100% of sustainable agriculture, organic, biodynamic. We try to buy local when possible. We adopted about 40 environmental changes in our business practice in order to help the environment and obviously save some money, have some economic impact, because sustainability also means to stay in business. You know, I mean, you have to be a sustainable business at the end. Last year, we concentrated on sustainable seafood. With the New England Aquarium and a few other entities, it's very complicated as well trying to determine what's sustainable in the seafood world and what's not. So we make our own decisions on choices, whether a species or type of seafood is sustainable or not. So one of the things that we did, and it was kind of very innovative, is we were able to design a QR code that is easily...
that's a little square thing that looks kind of squiggly.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a black and white code, yes, but yeah. We work with a French designer, and he helped us shape those little squares into a nice fish looking. So what I did is I use a silk screen, the ones I use for a shirt, and I took some squid ink, and I was able to screen that code into a plate. And through an initiative that was sponsored by the Environmental Defense Fund called Trace and Trust, that is a tool given to fishermen, local fishermen, to connect with consumers somehow. So what I did is I was able to create this. At the beginning, it was a fantasy. I said, well, this is how great will this be to have a consumer in your restaurant pull up their mobile phone and scan this edible code, and he's able to see where the fish was caught, when and by who, and when was delivered to the restaurant. So we were able to do that last year, and it was a great satisfaction to actually see how you have different different areas on this being sustainable. What it says is that we're buying at super fresh fish, you know, number one. Number two, we are doing a really fair value of the fish. For we're buying directly from the fishermen. We're basically eliminating the middlemen. So we're giving them more value for their product, for their work, which is really hard out there for them. That's another thing. And the other is that we're traceability. I mean, we're giving you the opportunity to really know where your food is coming from. So we start doing that. We did it with fish. it really took off with us. We're actually right now working with a Uruguayan grass-fed meat producer. So we're experimenting with a branding iron on a piece of steak. So you'll be able to scan that steak and it will tell you. Well, it will tell you exactly, you know, all the traceability of that, the cow, the cattle, you know. So we did a lot of that. This year we're working on becoming a little bit more social responsible. Food justice. I mean, we're helping the Emocali Coalition of Agricultural Workers in Florida. I was not aware of many things that I'm aware of now. About a year ago, I listened to Gerardo Reyes, who is a former agricultural worker, and now he's an activist that helps the rest of migrant force that actually are harvesting tomatoes in Florida. And listening to him, I discovered that there is also a human factor in food that we don't see at all. I mean, now I'm seeing it, but I know many people doesn't see it. You can have a tomato or a head of lettuce that comes from a really good land, really nutritious, very, very pure, no chemicals, no additives. It's harvested on the best microclimates and is brought to you on the lowest carbon footprint. But if that product has been harvested under modern slavery and not right conditions, that product is not sustainable. So that's something that we're not looking, and it's happening here in the United States. You know, it happens in Florida. So, and what we want to do is want to create awareness. We want to let people know that, hey, sustainability is not only recycling, you know, when you have businesses. It's a very complex terminology, you know, to put it together, but it has those you know, socioeconomical factors for fairness, you know, especially in the food justice. So we are very excited to say that at the end of the month we'll be presenting at an international conference in New York with Barry Esterbrook, who wrote Tomato Land, and Gerardo Reyes, and trying to, you know, I'm coming in as the connector. You know, I'm not really an expert on that subject, but I want people to know about it. So, and we can be trusted as chefs. You know, we put food in your plate. So at least we can have that side. So we've been working on that recently, and it's very exciting. So
I am speaking with chef and owner of Taranta in the North End, Chef Jose Duarte. And you can hear, anyone listening to you, that you are an evangelist about the subject of sustainability. You have walked us through not only the social responsibility aspect of sustainability, but what happens in your kitchen, what happens outside with the customers who are ordering the food, what your philosophy is about it, and why it's so important to you. So you are practicing what you preach. What I want to know is, there is a journey to travel to get to be an evangelist. That one time you were in the pew just listening. So let's talk about your journey as a chef and along the way how you began to pick up that which has become so much a part of your mission and your focus now. And I should tell people who don't or are not familiar with Taranta that it is a, well, some people might call it fusion. It's Italian, Peruvian, a marriage of Italian and Peruvian foods, which is quite delicious. But so give us a sense of where it all started for you.
Well, I was, since I have memory, I always liked food. I always, since I was 4 years old, I think I was ushering people into my house to see it and always had the spirit of hospitality. And I think I had few epiphanies during my life growing up and becoming a chef. And one of them was when I was perhaps 6-7 years old, and I lived in Venezuela. I moved from Peru to Venezuela, and we will go to Peru once a year to keep in touch with our family, you know, my grandparents, my uncles. And every time we'll go there, during that time, they will cook just for the day. They will go to the market and procure what they needed for that lunch, and usually you'll eat the same thing at night. So going to a market in Peru was kind of an event for me. It was kind of something that I would really look forward to the next day. I might not wake up to go someplace, but if they were going to the market at 5 a.m., I was the first one to be awake. And I found that was very inspiring, and the smells, the aromas of a lot of the, you know, the celery roots and things like that, kind of starting to wake, you know, to awake a little bit of that, you know, being a chef type of thing that we have inside. So and trying different things, products that even Peruvians will not like. I was given by the stand vendors, you know, some algae. Try this. This is delicious. And it's not delicious, but I think it's delicious. So give me some more. So we did. That was one of it. And another one was seeing a chef transform a whole fish into a ceviche in about 5 minutes. I mean, I was probably about 12 years old, and I was taking to this restaurant, Javier Wong, in Lima, and he just take this fish, and we're like, a ceviche or tiradito? And I said, ceviche. And so he takes the fish, takes a knife, boom, 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 and then here is a delicious piece of fish turned into a amazing ceviche. So I'm like, wow, I want to do something like that. So those are moments that that happened in my life. And I have many of them as a chef, you know. In terms of sustainability and how this changed, I think my children.
Because it's fairly new, the concept.
Yes, yes.
So what you were saying early on in your career
yes,
as a chef.
No, I was not. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I see is that we're responsible. And why are we responsible is because what I see now, I didn't see before, and my children are not seeing it now. But when my oldest daughter is 8 years old, and I think between my daughter being born and my son being born, he's six now, I traveled to Venezuela and I wanted to sort of show my children how beautiful this beach was. When I was perhaps 12 years old, I used to do snorkeling in these areas, and it was just a whole fantasy for me. It's fantastic. And when they were born, and then I went back and I tried to snorkel, the coral reef was destroyed. So I said, my children are not going to see what I saw. So that was kind of a changing element, in fact, for me to say, well, we can make a change for the future generation somehow, you know. So they were a big influential part on what made me change and become more responsible. The other part was a business, economic sense. It was a mere economic decision to start running my vehicles with grease from the kitchen fryer instead of having somebody.
But where did you see somebody do that? I mean, how did you?
Well, I actually did some research and interesting. There was a local magazine that featured some people that had that, and then I became interested, and now I can tell you everything about that. You know, we converted about seven cars. Some of them didn't work because it was too modern of a car. But we experiment a lot, and we try to make these changes, you know, and it work. So it was an economic, but along the way, I found that they make sense. And one of the things is that I feel really good about doing this. I was at a restaurant a couple of days ago, and the restaurant owner, which is a friend as well, you know, he goes, well, you're doing great about all these things, and I see all these styrofoam containers. I said, well, why don't you recycle? Why don't you stop using styrofoam? He goes, you're not going to change the world, he tells me. So I look at him and I say, but it feels like I am. So I don't care what you say. You know, it's my own satisfaction. And the same thing happens, too, with my employees. You know, you do good, you feel good. I mean, I am probably the only restaurant in the area where I am in the North End that has employees that understand that our business is done differently than other business, you know, by composting, recycling, the way we operate, our way of, and they feel good about it. I mean, it's kind of a motivational aspect. So it has been a journey on doing the things and a discovery, an experimentation and discovery journey to the point that you look at some scientific evidence on changes and things like that, and maybe in 10 years they will be flipped somehow because there might be other factors that will change. If there's 2 degrees temperature in an area that are harvesting the type of grapes or other areas, etc. So it's a changing world. So I will say that has evolved, and it has a few years for people to completely understand. What I was talking, if I was talking like this 6-7 years ago, people would not get it really well. But now there's a better sense for this. So,
well, curious, since you said you were going out to eat, but albeit at a friend's restaurant, when you just pick a place to go, does sustainability mean something to you? Do you look to see, is this a place?
I make some choices in regards to what I eat, because you can make those choices. I mean, if you go to a restaurant and they're serving Chilean sea bass or a Chilean species of fish that you know that you shouldn't be eating, I just don't order it. In many, many cases, I ask and I question, where is this coming from? Because I'd rather buy something that is, you know, local or comes from an area that I really understand. But you can make your own decisions. I ask my questions. You know, we eat most of the meat. My children, I only give them all nut, no hormones, no antibiotic, grass-fed beef. We eat a good amount of lamb. Lamb is a small animal. It doesn't, you know, it's only 12 months and doesn't need a lot of hormones or anything. So we basically make decisions whether order something or not when we go eat in the restaurant. And we believe, for example, our restaurant, we don't want to emphasize that we're so green. We're a green certified restaurant. We receive many accolades, et cetera, et cetera. We're trying to certify it ISO 14001, which is unheard for a restaurant, which is more than for industry. But if you understand how our practice goes, you probably have more loyalty toward us, you know. And I do the same thing with other chefs or the restaurants that really care and procure some products. And I really have a different method of appreciation for that food, so...
I am speaking with Chef Jose Duarte. He's a chef owner of Taranta in the North End, which is a marriage. He provides a marriage of Italian and Peruvian food. You know, you can be as intense as you are about sustainability, and maybe a lot of people wouldn't go along with it, except that you're getting all kinds of accolades for the food in Taranta.
Yeah, too. By the way,
that's how you have to get people in there, and then you can give them your philosophy. So the food, the marriage of the Italian and Peruvian, A, we don't have that around anywhere. It's very different. Give us a little bit of history as how that came to be.
It's very simple. Mm-hmm. I was born in Peru. I lived in Venezuela. I opened a restaurant in 2000 in the North End. It was a strictly Southern Italian restaurant. And I am married to an Italian from the North End. So I have no choice right there. So it's what better than doing this marriage of Peruvian and Italian, you know? So at the beginning was a very, I was skeptic to introduce these Peruvian ingredients because, to tell you the truth, the restaurant was not doing good at all. Because we tried to do this Cucina Meridionale, which was trying to rescue these recipes from South Italy that were very, they're 16th century recipes. And we were doing chocolate eggplant with a few other things, candied orange, etc. So it was very difficult for us. So until I found these Peruvian ingredients in a supermarket, I started incorporating the menu, just hiding, not telling anyone that I was doing that. And people will say, oh, what is this? Special sauce. You know, we wouldn't say too much. And then I got a reporter from a local newspaper saying, we need to do a story about you doing that. I'm saying, no, you can't do that. You know, I'm, you know, Latin kid in the North End. Oh, how am I going to do this? You know, you got to be careful. And next thing you know is a big story, Ciao Peru, with a picture of my mini calzones, which are empanadas, you know, just no more than that. But I had to create this name. So we start, was kind of that motivational factor to create, utilize these very unique ingredients that my Peru can give me. You know, we have 3,500 varieties of potatoes, 800 varieties of corn. It's a very diverse country. It's very hard for me to say that my restaurant is sourcing all local ingredients because it's not true. I mean, I am what I am. I want to use ají amarillo. I have to bring it from Peru. But I find a way to bring it on the lowest footprint or from the best source as well. So it became this marriage of Peruvian Italian, and we have dishes or cassava root gnocchi with a braised lamb ragu. That started me missing that flavor, having it as an employee milk, smashing a yuca with the sauce and saying, can this be a great gnocchi? So started to create. We serve in a very nice fish now called the Paiche Amazon. It's the Arapaima
Higashi. Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah, the Paiche Amazon. Paiche is the largest scaled freshwater fish in the world. It can grow up to 16 feet, about 300 pounds. It's an endangered species. But with this initiative, we're trying to recoup and control the commercial fishing of the wild, because this is born in captivity. And it's such a big fish that the biomass ratio by feeding is very low. So in 18 months, you can get a really good fish that's about 30 pounds, 25 pounds size. No PCBs, no mercury, high collagen. So it's a really good product, and it's delicious. You know, and actually featured in neighborhood kitchens.
Right here on WGBH.
Absolutely.
That's right. Yeah.
So and doing this unique products, but always... If it's not doing it with the Peruvian ingredient or the Peruvian technique. We always have that Italian technique attached to it, or a marriage. We do a dish with carob syrup and vincotto, which is the reduction of the grape moss. That is, the carob syrup is algarrobina from Peru. It's 100% northern Peruvian syrup, and then the southern Italian. So we mix those two, and that's the Peruvian Italian. So we have, all our dishes have a little bit of that. It's kind of what we got to, so...
I've not been to your restaurant yet. I'm going to make a plan to do that. But I had a sample of some of your food at El Planeta's Latin Food Festival last year.
Yes.
And let me just say, I was, you know, me and several of the thousands of people knocking over each other trying to get there.
Yes.
It's pretty good, chef.
Yeah, we did a, it was a sweet. We did a dessert.
Yes, oh my God.
It was a lucumisu. It was a, that's a perfect example. So it was a not so traditional tiramisu with lucuma, which is a Peruvian fruit. It's a zapotasia. It's the ancient lost crop of the Incas, you know. So this fruit is very delicious. It has that flavor of butterscotch, kind of a nutmeg flavor. So we made that, and we have actually come up with names. We have the lucumisu, the guavanoli, the calzoncinis, you know, and we're working on a few others.
I can just tell you, it's delicious.
Good, yeah.
I stood by that station a little too long. I'm sorry.
That was you, right?
Yeah, that's right. It was quite good. But I wanted to note that while we know that the North End is recognized for really great Italian food, and you know, all over the country, not just here in the city, Peruvian food is hot now.
It's coming.
I mean, you're on the cutting edge of the food trend.
The Peruvians are coming. Yes.
How do you feel about that, being
one of
the first?
I mean, it's great. I mean, yeah. we're mixing it up. I mean, we're trying to get on the works ahead on that. But if you look at a lot of the trends of gastronomy, I mean, Peru has so much diversity in the food. And in the last 10 years, it has been this explosion of really good culinary skills in Peru that are traveling around the world. They basically exporting great food, and they're exporting talent as well. There's a lot of schools, and we thank this to one of, Gaston Acurio, who is a famous chef in Peru. I think he was the beginner of this movement, and now there is a lot of really good Peruvian chefs out there that are opening restaurants all over the world. We just had a friend opening one in London, and they're opening in good places. And Peru has become now a gastronomic destination. Europe, a lot of European countries, Spain and Italy and France, they're making Peru not only the archaeology and the history, but the food. The food is playing a very important role in this millennium. So as you hear, oh, French cuisine, I say, no, Latin cuisine. The Peruvians are coming.
Now, as I understand it, you're it for Massachusetts and in this area in terms of Peruvian food. I know there's some people in New York, but is that correct?
Yeah, there's good Peruvian restaurants in Boston.
Yeah. I mean,
we have Machu Picchu, we have Rincon Limeño, we have, Taranta is, we will find few of the Peruvian dishes in there, but we are more on this marriage type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we have an excellent ceviche in the summer that we make it traditionally as Peru. So we do feature a lot of Peruvian dishes in there as they are. New York has abundant, and Paterson, New Jersey is a big Peruvian community.
Really?
And then there's a lot of restaurants in there. But you will see a big proliferation of Peruvian restaurants in the next 5 years. I think it's pisco sours are becoming very popular, or ceviches and the different anticuchos and these unique causas and all this.
And what's a causa?
Causa is a, it's a, actually we feature in the show as well, but it's a causa, it's a Peruvian dish made with a very unique potato, a yellow Peruvian potato out of those 3,000 varieties. And causa in Spanish, in English, actually means cause.
Mm.
And it was a dish that initially happened during the war against Chile, in which these vianderas, or ladies that will go on the street trying to collect food, will knock on the door and say if you can have, they can have some food for the cause of the Peruvian soldiers. So they were gathering food and build this dish. So it's kind of like a cold shepherd's pie that is made with this rice potato, it's cold. And usually we stuff it in Peru with tuna, avocado, some mayo. We do it at Taranta with some crab meat. We've done it. And it's a very unique dish, and it's served cold, a little spicy. So, and it's kind of one of the flag dishes of Peruvian gastronomy, not only because it's delicious, but I think because it has a good story. I think every country, every dish should have a story behind, and that will make that dish have more identity somehow. So.
Again, my guest is Chef Jose Duarte. He's a chef owner of Taranta in the North End, and we're talking about delicious Peruvian food, which is part of the marriage of food in his restaurant. He marries Italian and Peruvian food together. So you talked about the excitement of your chef, of your staff, and yourself about sustainability and where you are in that movement. And this wonderful QR code scanner, which allows people to come into the restaurant, scan it, and see instantly where their fish came from and who fished it, as a matter of fact. I'm curious to know what their response has been.
Well, at the beginning, for me, this was kind of a fantasy because I said, how cool would that be? And actually, it happened. So, and I have this skepticism. I'm not really prone to people scanning and using their mobile devices on their phone. I think that we're getting a little bit, we have that urge of information more and more, and we start panicking if we don't check our emails or our phones every 5 seconds. So I was a little, against that, But what we do in the restaurant is we have a stamp. We make it an ink stamp, and if somebody really wants to know the answer or wonders what that is, we can verbally tell them this fish belongs to fisherman Tarantra from this place. And I say, oh, really? How? When was it caught? So if the person shows an interest, we can give this really strong answer. We bring the code, we stamp it, we have them scan it, and they can trace that fish to the sea. So we want to be as educational as we want, but we also don't want to detract from that dining experience mm-hmm. because sometimes you want to go there and just enjoy dinner and relax and have a little zen moment.
but farm to table is huge in Massachusetts,
I think. But, the thing is that we also want to educate. We have this desire to tell you a little bit of what we serve, but we want you to express that interest. So if you ask questions, we will give you the answer. So people, when they ask the questions, and we've seen that, and we notice that there is more interest in traceability. I mean, we see technology, and my question now will be, who validates that? How do we validate that fish was traced right? Food safety is very important. I don't think the United States has a mandatory system of traceability, of seeing, how many, where is this meat coming from, etc. So I think that with technology, we will be able to really trace the origins of our food somehow. And eventually, I think at the chef level, to really test food to see if there is any pollutants, PCBs, and mercury in the fish, because that's something that we cannot see. But I think technology will be available for us to actually reject a species that comes in because it's high levels of mercury, which opens up a whole complete new set on sustainability, and it comes into the health part of the human being. Of eating a fish that you can't really determine if there's PCBs. It's the only mm-hmm. way to do that is by testing it. And unfortunately, right now, it's very difficult and expensive, but I think as technology advances, there will be ways for us to start controlling that as well.
Well, there's a couple of ways where you can take your evangelism about sustainability outside of your restaurant in the North End, and one is that I understand you're planning to teach a course on sustainability.
I actually am mm-hmm. already teaching at mm-hmm. a local college. I'm an adjunct faculty, and I started last night.
A whole day, okay.
It was actually last night we started a four-hour meeting. Where?
Uh-huh.
It's at Newry College.
Okay.
Yeah, so I want you to ask me the question.
Okay.
Newry College, and I have 20 students, most of them culinary students, and last night it was a great time. We spent half an hour defining what sustainability was, and they got it, because all the answers I got from them was recycling, to sustain. Everything was energy and energy-related, pollution-related, but there was nothing really on the economic and on the human part, on the social part of it, and kind of opened up their minds a little bit to see how important it is. So we were, and the other thing is that there's nothing written about it. Restaurant sustainability, mm-hmm. I was trying to find something, kind of double work for me because I have to sort of develop a syllabus.
But you might have to write a book.
Eventually, yeah. So, the next class we will be talking about energy itself. We'll learn about a footprint, about types of energy, biomass, solar power. We're actually working with MIT on the development of a carbon footprint calculator through a project which is going to be available for chefs eventually. It's a project that they're doing in-house. And have some guest speakers along the way of the course, like Rich Garcia from Congress 606, who's going to be here during the Artisan Taste and the Seafood Fest, the seminars, and Elizabeth Fitzsimmons from the New England Aquarium to help us, you know, give them a more in-depth understanding, because they want to learn. They want to know a lot of this. And we use a lot of different technologies in the restaurant that are web-based technologies that we can access and see exactly how many kilowatt hours is our refrigeration unit consuming on the carbon footprint of it, and also how much it's costing us, and help us make decisions for that as well. So,
and just to be clear for anyone who's confused by your conversation to Chef Jose Duarte, you do cook, and you cook really well. And yes. I want you to, in the next way that you're going to sort of expand your mission about sustainability, but in a very delicious way, is here at the WGBH Artisan Taste and Food and Wine Festival this weekend. And tell us what you're going to prepare.
Well, on the we're doing the gala night, which is going to be this Thursday night. And I am making a yuca gnocchi, cassava root gnocchi, with a braised lamb ragu, secco style. We're using some Iowa lamb, and we are making this Peruvian-inspired green ragu, cilantro base, with made with chicha de jora, which is a fermented corn cider from Peru. A little Stravecchio Parmigiano, that's going to be nice. And we've made pairing it with a nice Malbec. So that's going to be that night. And then we have the artisan table that it's going to be on Saturday, I believe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there we'll do in a causa, but we're doing a sushi causa. We're going to shape the causa like a sushi, and we're going to put a little lobster on the top. It's going to be a nice new. So I still haven't decided exactly. I'm going to go to the market on Friday or Saturday morning and get some fresh stuff, maybe some smoked bluefish, and I'll do different type of things. So, and that's the beauty about working fresh, you know, that you can't predict much a menu. And that's one of the things sometimes I say, will you have ceviche there? What fish will you have? I says, don't know. I gotta go to the market. I gotta go see what's out there, you know. So, but we'll have those causes there for the cause, you know. So that's gonna be on the artisan table. So.
Well, Chef Jose Duarte, nobody can say you're not a holistic, sustainable chef. You got it going on, from the composting to the tracing of the fish to the thinking about who are the people that are working in the fields to prepare the food, to the mission of telling your consumers and allowing them to be a part of the experience if they wish to know where their food came from. And all of that in a delicious marriage of Italian and Peruvian food.
Now educating, which is the best part of it.
There you go.
This great cycle. You know,
I can always be educated if there's a delicious meal happening.
No.
Thank you so much, Chef.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you again.
Chef Jose Duarte is just one of the chefs who will be participating in the Taste of WGBH Food and Wine Festival, which kicks off tomorrow and goes through the weekend right here at the WGBH studios. More information about that is available on our website, wgbhnews.org. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Up next, with the school year underway again, Lawrence, Massachusetts is charting a new course under the strict supervision of the state. We're looking at this moment of major change for Lawrence and what it would take to get the schools back on track. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley.